I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience, a podcast where dads can connect and openly share stories.
On this episode of The Dad Experience, we talked to Chad, a dad and film score composer who packed up his family to fulfill a dream. All this in our favorite segment, Things We Can't Wait to Share Through Our Children's Eyes. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Dad Experience. I am so excited about tonight's, or today's episode, or depending on when you watch this, whenever, day, night, different time zone. Really excited to catch up with an old college friend who's done very, very, very well for himself. Chad Raymond, not only an amazing father, but a very successful film score composer. Chad grew up in a small mid-Michigan farming community, and he went into music education at Michigan State. That's where I met Chad. And he was really into writing composition and really wanted to get into film school. I remember that from day one. And he was just really excited to do that and did something that I can only dream of. He packed up the car with his wife and moved to California, kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies, it sounds like there, but not quite. And he has done well for himself. He's composed quite a few music for quite a few different films and different children's films as well as adult films. I've seen from his IMDb. You can check his IMDb out. You can also check out his webpage. I think it's Chad Raymond Music. Chad, is that what it is?
ChadRaymond.com.
ChadRaymond.com. Sorry, I thought I put music in there. It's ChadRaymond.com, and you can find all his IMDb stuff on there, as well as any links to anything he's doing. So, Chad, it's so nice to be able to catch up with you and bring you on The Dad Experience. Welcome.
Oh, it's awesome being here. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. It's been a long time. Probably, it's probably for you and I been about what?
Probably 15, huh?
15 years since we've talked. I was at your wedding.
That's right.
And that might have been one of the last times we talked, because weren't you graduated when you got married, or did it just happen?
Yeah. I think our wedding was the last time I talked to a lot of people back at school.
Because you packed up and left, didn't you?
We left about a month after we got married. July 03, and we had a couple weeks, did a honeymoon, and then drove out to L.A. with $1,000 and a beat up old Saturn.
Wow. That's the American dream, man. And now you have a family and you're living it.
I tell you what, it's so many things could have gone wrong when we look back on it now, but enough things went right. So we're happy.
That's good. That's good. Well, I'm really excited to talk to you. I mean, we had quite the time, you and me and a couple other friends in college. It's too bad that we ended up moving. I'm the only one I think that stayed in Michigan out of that group and core of that used to hang out. And, the rest of everybody has kind of moved either teaching other places or other states, and we just kind of grew apart. Although I know if we saw each other in person or ran across each other, it would be like old times. But
it'd be like yesterday.
It would. So let's start off our show just like I start every other episode off. Who lives with you at home, and what is the makeup of your family?
So my wife and I, we knew each other since we were six, wow. And then got married right after college. And we got married 2003. And then 2009, we had our daughter, Catherine. And then 2011, our second, Nicholas, he's seven. And then Micah is going to turn, 3.5, I guess, because he's going to turn 4 in December.
Nice.
And then two cats and 3 fish. But
I was going to ask you, do you have pets at home? Everybody wants to bring those up. Everybody wants to know about the pets. So
cats.
Hey, man, it's important. They're an important part of the family. So it said you moved to LA. You said you moved to LA with $1,000 in an old Saturn. So
yes.
did that impact you deciding to have kids, or when you wanted to have kids? Did you guys kind of plan that out, or how did you know it was the right time, and what did you decide with that?
Well, you know what? We waited for a while, and I don't know how, if your listeners can appreciate this, but we just kind of got to the point where no time is the perfect time.
No, that's true.
When I started out my career, I mean, when I first moved out here, I had a music degree. My wife had a art and psychology degree, and she started grad school, and I started waiting tables at a restaurant. That was kind of my gig for a little bit. I played piano at churches and kind of just did whatever I could do to make ends meet. And so it was never really a good time to have kids. And then about 5-6 years in, the career kind of started taking off a little. But it got to the point where it's like, if we just keep waiting for the perfect moment's not going to kind of present itself. So we just kind of took the leap and we said, you know what, we're going to find a way to make this work because this is important to us. And yeah, it was nerve-wracking because the year my daughter was born, 09, was actually the year that I kind of stopped doing a lot of the side jobs and threw myself into my career 100%. And so that was very difficult in that now my time was split between, yeah, I have a new daughter, but I also have this business, or if I don't put time into it, I don't really have anything to fall back on. I mean, my wife's income, and thankfully she had a great job and was able to help, actually carry us for a little bit. So, yeah, early on in the career and having the kid at the same time, it was difficult, but like I said, no perfect moment kind of presented itself. So it was just a leap of faith.
Yeah. Though, and then, you know what? I don't know that any time is the right time. I always wonder that when I ask that question, or, you know, you can plan things and we're an example of that too, is we've planned and planned and planned, but our plan took us 4 years past the plan. So,
right.
I mean, you can't plan, you can't know exactly when anything's going to happen. So, so I'm assuming it was a bit scary then for a little bit, huh? When you immerse yourself in work and then decided to have a child, huh?
Absolutely. It was the year my daughter was born was, probably the lowest income annually that I've ever made. Our bathroom exploded and flooded our kitchen. Our daughter was, but it was just one of those years where it was like every possible catastrophe could happen.
Right.
And, but you know, you make it through.
Things all work out. Things happen for a reason. Right. So I firmly believe that. So when you decided to switch over and say, hey, you know what, I'm focusing on work. Was that, you know, because you thought maybe you were holding yourself back from, you know, getting those jobs and going after those composition jobs that you knew you should be getting because you had to go do X, Y, or Z job? Or was it just a choice to say, hey, I'm just done. I can't do any other job because I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm supposed to be writing music. Like, what was your decision there? Why'd you make that move?
Yeah, for me, it was a lot of, how do I put this? It just got to the point where, I don't know if jack of all trades, master of none is the right word, but it just got to this point where I was, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to give my 100%, and I was giving my 100% to too many things. And I was just spreading myself thin. I was, you know, I was playing gigs, I was teaching music, I was doing this and that, and I was trying to kind of build my career in many different funnels, so to speak, and, or silos, I guess. And, it just got to the point where the film stuff started just, I wasn't able to devote enough time. And so it got to the point where every time I said yes to something else, I was saying no to that. And I just really had to flip that and say, excuse me. And my wife would say it a lot. She would say, you know, why are we out here? And she didn't mean it in a derogatory or a negative way. It was just like, what's our focus? We came out here for this. And every time I threw myself into another project or another gig or another teaching opportunity, it just got to the point where it's like, you know, I can do that anywhere, really. But if I want to do film music, we got to be in LA. And if we're in LA, if that's the reason we're here, then I got to just start focusing on that. And so it was a little prodding for my wife, but it was a lot of me just realizing that I can't have it all. I can't do it all. And that's the reason I'm out here. So I just got to kind of throw myself into it.
Right. Well, it makes sense. I mean, it sounds like you got to support because, I mean, anybody could say, you know what, we're packing up and moving home, or you're going to not live out your dream. You're going to make money for the family, right? And it sounds Absolutely. Like she was super supportive. And I think she's, you know, if it were me, I would hope my wife would do the same thing. Like you said, I don't think it was mean. I think it was, we're out here because you're pursuing something and I believe in you. So right. We need to do that and we'll make it work no matter what. Well, that sounds like you got a good, strong support system there, which is nice.
More than amazing, she is.
That's awesome. And I think behind all of us dads, or, you know, there's always another person there that's supporting us, whether it's our, you know, our wife or husband or partner, or just somebody that's there, step parent, or even just a partner, you know, partner in life that's just helping. I mean, everybody's got somebody that they've got to rely on. And you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at without my wife. So, you know, more power to you guys. And that's awesome that she's supporting you. So, what kind of role has music played in raising your children? Has there been, you know, have they started to immerse themselves in the music? Have they taken after dad, or do you guys utilize music a lot in the home? You know, what kind of role is going on with your children?
Yeah, you know, my studio is outside of the house. So I actually noticed this a few years ago that we really didn't have many musical instruments around the house just because my studio is in a separate, I lease a separate space for the studio. So all the keyboards and the gear and guitars and all that kind of stuff are at a different space. And I think my daughter was 3 or 4 and I looked around. And I was like, my gosh, it doesn't even look like we're a musical family because everything's out of the house. But my daughter did want to take piano lessons and she wanted to take it from me. And I thought that was a horrible idea because you can't teach your own kid. But I was like, I'll give it a shot. And it lasted about 3-4 months. I mean, she is me in that she's kind of this strong-willed, independent, tell it like it is person. And we were so much alike. It didn't work out. But she has expressed interest in now taking up guitar. And I know she wanted to take it when she was 4 or 5. And I don't know too much about it, but I think we talked to a couple of people and they thought her hands might have been just a little too small for that at this point. But that is something that she's wanted to take up. My son loves going to concerts. Anytime I have a recording session, anytime I have a concert, he is he wants to be at everything like that. My daughter, not as much, but my second son definitely really has an ear for music. He's always singing in the shower. He absolutely loves it. So every time I have a session or something that I go to that involves music, he just sits there and just soaks it all up. So I think out of all of them, the middle one's going to kind of be the musician. But there's a lot of singing in our house. You know, when we're in the car, even driving to school, like right now it's Hamilton and Greatest Showman. Those are the two CDs that are kind of on repeat in our place. And I mean, they know kind of the popular music, but they just love listening to soundtracks. And my son, I took him to Hollywood Bowl and they did a John Williams night and he could name, you know, Jaws, Harry Potter, E.T., Jurassic Park, like just by the first couple bars, just because he absolutely loves listening to that stuff. So that's kind of how music plays a role in us. I do hope that, you know, and that's partly on us as parents. Life has just gotten busy and we haven't really put them in formal piano lessons, but that is something we've talked about doing this year, at least just to kind of give them a basis for music education. But they do have an amazing music program at school, and it's actually one of the reasons we chose the school is because we met with the music teacher at one of the open houses and she just blew us away. And we saw the year previous, we saw one of the Christmas programs at the school, and it was just incredible. The kids were just smiling and having the time of their life, and the program was great, and that was really a big draw for us. So I know that even though we don't have them in formal lessons right now, they're getting a ton of music education at the school, which is fantastic, which you don't see a lot of, unfortunately, now.
No.
But yeah, in our case, we really lucked out.
Right, right. So do you think that music has kind of helped you with your children and developing them socially and cognitively? I know you said they're not really any formal music classes, but just from anything you're doing at home or the concerts they're getting exposed to or the general music classes or the main music classes they have at their school, do you think that's kind of played a role in their development?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, we're so big on how can we make them the most well-rounded kids that we can. And, you know, whether that's music, whether that's art, whether that's, you know, my son took one of those Lego engineering classes because he just could sit there for hours and build. And so it's this idea of, yeah, math, science, social studies are fantastic. And you know, the basis for so much to build off of. But for us, we're more interested in, you know, what experiences can we give them at a young age to not only supplement, but, you know, also be part of their core, you know, education that they receive. Because I don't know enough about music education to kind of go on a rant or a thing about it. But for me, I never really saw music education and art and all this kind of stuff as the supplemental thing. It's integral. I think it's exactly what our kids need, and I never want to think of it as an extra, especially in the school curriculum, but it should be something that should be touted as necessary, not optional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and you know, there's a lot of movement. I mean, you know there's Common Core going towards music and stuff like that, and
right.
and a big fight to make it It's a part, you know, music shouldn't just be a prep hour for another teacher. And this is kind of going in the education realm, but, you know, I'm going to kind of keep it brief, but it shouldn't be where the other teacher gets a break. So they're going to go to music or gym or art or whatever, or library or, you know, whatever class they may have. It should be.
But think about it. I mean, yeah. I mean, for me, it's, you know, yeah, I don't want to say the other subjects are bad, but it's when you think about, for instance, math or pre-calc or all this kind of stuff. Yeah. I understand the importance of it, but I am not going to experience pre-calc as a 37-year-old, but I'm experiencing music every day. Right. So why shouldn't it be part of my primary experience as a child?
Well, yeah. And I mean, could you imagine going back to your elementary school and not having your general music class or that chance to be in beginning band? I mean, this is your profession. This is how you make this is your livelihood. This is your passion. And could you imagine being, a computer engineer or, you know, I can't, and I'm in music education. I can't imagine. And if I didn't have that stuff without having my mom being a music teacher, I wouldn't have had that drive to go into it because it's important. You know, I don't know if you've seen, I've been taken by the whole James Corden, Paul McCartney thing that just happened. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And I was taken by it, and I was talking.
What is it? Karaoke.
Carpool karaoke, but he did a whole 23-minute part of an episode or an episode with just Paul McCartney.
Yep.
And you've seen that one, Chad? Okay. And yes. They went everywhere. We went to his childhood home in Liverpool. They went to the barbershop in Penny Lane. And I made my pilgrimages to all those places. But at the end, and this is, I guess it's kind of a spoiler. So if you don't want to listen to this, kind of fast forward about maybe 30 seconds. But at the end, he does a pop-up live performance, right? And I was talking to my family. I was sitting with my father-in-law and my wife, and my daughters were in there. My daughter was just mesmerized on the screen on TV and dancing and smiling. And then I said later, it almost brought tears to my eyes. And I said to my family later, I said, you know, for that one moment, if you look in that audience, every single person was smiling and excited. I don't think they were worried about any crazy tragedy going on in the world or anything that anybody might disagree with on political ends or social norms. It was about getting together. And I guarantee there were people with different opinions in that room. It was about getting together and listening to music that made people happy.
Yeah.
And what would we be without that? Yeah. I mean, I look at that and think about it. There's so much happiness and excitement that he just came on stage and played for these 60 people in a room. I mean, it's crazy. And what other thing can do that? I don't know of much other than artwork or, you know what I mean? Like I don't work on my toilet and think, not to knock any plumbers or anything, but I don't work on my toilet and smile like that.
Well, you know, it's this idea of shared experience too. I think, society as a whole is getting away from this because we're so in our screens. But just this idea of, going to a live concert, or even just going to a movie theater and experiencing a premiere or, you know, a movie on opening weekend with an audience. It's such a different experience than sitting in your living room by yourself. And
exactly.
I just think we're missing out on that. And, luckily, I guess, you know, you could argue that one of the reasons live music is kind of making a comeback is because they're not making any money in CD sales and streaming. And that's a whole nother conversation. But I think if anything, the positive aspect of that is that more and more bands are touring, and it just seems like the last 10, 15 years, there's been this resurgence of live shows,
right,
and live festivals and concerts. And so hopefully, you know, that can kind of be used as a catalyst to bring that shared experience back. But yeah, it's, I think you're absolutely right. It's just this idea of experiencing something with another human being that seems to kind of be lost lately.
You know, and I want my kids to have that. I want my kids to be able to do that and be with somebody that's totally different from they are and enjoy something because it makes them happy, or it makes them be able to connect on a different level than nothing else could. And I don't think we have enough of that. And you said, we get caught up on the screens and things like that, you know.
I'm as guilty as the next person.
Oh, me too. I mean, I have a podcast, so I can tell you anything. Right. I'm definitely involved in that. But, it's interesting. You're talking about technology and screens, and you know, I've even seen more now, or I've been seeing lately, because I have a VR type thing in the house here, and they're doing more live concerts with that, like live shows, yeah, where people are, where you go and you're a part of the audience, which is pretty neat. I missed the one that I wanted to see. I think like it was Nathaniel Ratliff or something, which was pretty sweet. But yeah, they're doing that. I see more too, which is cool, but it still doesn't, you know, you're still not there. You're not talking to the person next, right, to you. If they could incorporate that you're sitting in a seat talking with people around you and watching or whatever, that would be the next step that would be interesting. But, you know, again, I don't think it'll replace live music ever, because there's something about the magic of going in and waiting for the artist. When are they going to come on? All that good stuff.
Yep. But, and it's the smells, it's the sights. It's
right.
The whole thing.
Right. So, you know, kind of talking, we're kind of transitioning into this anyways, the screens. How do you manage, you know, you do film, you've done certain films that, you know, your kids can't watch. Right. How do you manage your content at home, or that time they say, Dad, I want to see some of your stuff. You know, how do you guys as parents manage the content and filter the things that you want them to see or don't want them to see?
That's a good question. We, you know, the kids don't have TVs in their room. They don't have computers in their room. If they use an iPad, it has to be, you know, in the living room. When we're around, they can't just take their iPad and go off. Now, you know, with a 7 and 9 year, I'm not worried about my 4 year old, but even with the 7 and 9 year old, I'm naive, but I'm not as worried yet. Mm-hmm. But I know that, you know, some of the scary stuff seems to be starting at younger and younger ages with these kids. But for us, it's just trying to be as involved and understanding the technology, which is another thing. It just seems like every week there's something coming out that I can't even wrap my head around, but my kid teaches me about. In terms of the content that I help create, yeah, there's a lot of films that I've done, especially the last 3-4 years have been a lot of focus on kind of thriller horror films that they will never, I mean, they'll see in high school or, you know, college, but it's not something at all that they'll see now. But luckily, I do kind of have a lot of films in the early part of my career, like Dog Who Saved Christmas, you know, and all these Christmas films or these kids films that I do have. So they are able to at least see what Daddy does. But because of my recent films, they're not able to necessarily see what Daddy's doing now. But they can at least kind of experience. And the nice thing is when they come to sometimes they'll come to the studio if they have a day off school or something and they need to kind of hang. I can always shut the video off and still write, so they can still kind of at least see what I do and kind of experience that a little without seeing the images. But yeah, it's yeah. I guess for us, it's just trying to keep the screens always around so that we can see them. And in terms of stuff that I create, it's just a matter of being very, very selective.
Yeah, no, and you know, that seems to be a lot of what people are telling me is as far as that and communication go a long way versus no. So,
right.
I think those are all important things and all things that we as dads can learn from each other, because your way may be slightly different from my way, but might be able to take and tweak that might be helpful for all of us. So.
You know, it's just so hard to stay on top of
the technology. There's just too much. Like, I don't even know how. Like, I try and get into some of the social apps and different things like that just to understand them and experience them, especially being in education in a high school setting. I want to know, and I want to know what's going on. And you know how it is as a band director. It's a little bit different. I mean, being in music, knowing your friends that have gone into band directing, mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a different baby just because you see those kids every day and you see them for 4 years straight. So you want, you know, I'm trying to understand what they're dealing with, not necessarily, I'm not interacting with them, but I want to know what they're dealing with. So when they come in and say, I'm being bullied by this, or I need to understand how it's working. So if I need to present it to X, Y, or Z, or I need to talk to them about it, I can, but it's hard. I don't know how to do this stuff anymore. Like, you know, I'm sure when my daughters are the age, they're going to be showing me too, but maybe I'll be retired by then. Who knows?
But I always laughed at my parents when I had to teach them how to, you know, set the VCR or something like that. And I feel like that the other day, I mean, it was just, it was just a couple months ago. I was complaining about something on the iPad. And my daughter says, because I had to transfer something from an iPad over to the computer to print it off. And she says, well, you know, you can print right from the iPad. I says, no, you can't. She's like, yeah. I was like, no, you can't.
Slide that thing up on the bottom, Dad. Right? Come on.
I was like, this is an old iPad. Like, there's no way. And my gosh, within 20 seconds it was printing. And I felt, I was like, this is what my parents felt like. Hey, it was a very proud moment for her.
We're pushing 40. So, I mean, we are getting there. We're getting there. So, so kind of along the lines of what you've composed and the content that you write for, do you ever compose with your children? Do any of them show an interest in that? Or have you written music together as a family? Have you done anything like that?
Yeah. You know, I hope my wife thinks this is okay to say. Every year since Kate was probably two or three, for Mother's Day, we make a CD for her, for my wife. And it, you know, at first it just kind of started this fun thing where I put a microphone up to Kate and she would sing the ABCs or, you know, whatever song she learned in school. But my wife has loved it in that, you know, she said to me, it's really cool to listen to the years and kind of hear the kids' voices, you know, grow over the years. I mean, for Kate now, she has 7 CDs from the age of 2 up to 9. When Kate got about 5 or 6, then all of a sudden she wanted the backing karaoke tracks. She, you know, the 1, 2, 3s and ABCs weren't enough for her. So this year for Mother's Day, we had the three of us, Nicholas, Catherine, and I, and we did a couple of Greatest Showman tunes, and kind of, you know, did it up as best as we could. But also part of the CDs is I actually encourage the kids, I just hit record and I tell them to sing about their mom or sing about, you know, whatever they want. And those are the funniest tracks because they start looking around the room and just start picking out objects like pencils and speakers and doors and start singing about them. And it's some of the funniest stuff, but it's some of the most honest stuff. It's like just this honest look inside of their world. Just say, hey, just sing for 5 minutes and whatever comes out, comes out. So those are kind of the funniest tracks that we have on the CDs. But yeah, as kind of as a family with me and the kids, that's kind of our time. Every about a month before Mother's Day, we sit in the recording studio and kind of spend a day trying to record something for Carrie.
Nice. That's really cool. And, you know, that's a really cool idea for, you know, other parents out there because, you know, realistically, you know, you and I might be a little bit more lucky. You might have some equipment that you can record with, obviously. But other people out there, you know, the iPhone isn't a bad thing to record on just as something you know.
I was going to say, even when, you know, our 2 and 3 year old, like he's not going to stand, well, our 3 year old now, even he's not going to stand in front of a microphone and give me takes. So it's really just walking around with my iPhone. And if he starts singing, just kind of put it behind him so he doesn't see that I'm recording him.
Exactly.
Doesn't take any special equipment to capture that.
Well, I'm glad you shared that because I think that's a really cool thing that other dads out there or people out there might want to do to share with their loved ones. That's really cool and really neat to do. So,
and it's a fun bonding moment too.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Great to create something with your children.
Right. Right. And those are some great ideas to use. I might be stealing some of that myself now too. So, I'm assuming with the type of work you're in and, scoring for film that you've gone to premieres of some of these films. Yep. Yeah. So I mean, obviously not the ones that aren't appropriate, but have you taken your children to any of the premieres or anything like that?
Premieres? No. However, Kate was actually just on set with me 2 days ago for an upcoming, Christmas film. And I was kind of nervous, just because, you know, on sets, you got to be really quiet, you know, there's protocol, there's all this kind of stuff. But I felt, you know, she's 9, she can kind of handle this. And obviously on film sets, there's language and, you know, all that other kind of stuff. But I felt like she was the age that, you know, we could talk about it afterwards if anything happened. But she discovered catering and there was a puppy on set. So I think like between all the free food and the puppy, she could have cared less as to what was happening with the production. And afterwards, a couple of the actresses came up and says, you know, how did you like it? And she's like, well, the puppy was really cute. And they kind of looked at me and I was like, well, you know, she's nine. But I thought it would have been exciting for her. And she was excited. But the minute she saw there was a puppy on set, it was nice.
Well,
it was nice to experience that.
That is pretty neat, though, that you can take your children with you and kind of experience that now and let them see where dad works because that's important. I think it's important to see that stuff.
And this is a director I've done 5 or 6 films with, so it wasn't somebody that I was, you know, kind of nervous with my relationship or it was a new relationship or anything. And he was totally cool with it. He's like, yeah, bring her on set, it'll be fun. And she had a good time. She did hear some words Which she informed me later. She's like, "It's okay, Dad. I already knew those words." Which I don't know if I was even more disturbed by that, but right. Whatever. It is what it is.
But was it weird seeing a Christmas film in the middle of June?
Yes.
Yeah. I bet that was strange.
Absolutely. And you know, most Christmas films in here in town, from what I don't, you know, once post-production happens, I'm not really involved at all with distribution, but from what I understand, most Christmas films, you know, if a network's going to air them, they basically gotta have the purchases in by September. So if you're doing a Christmas film, it's either one that you filmed last year in the snow, or it's one that you filmed in June, July, August, and you have ready to go by September. So yeah, it's about every 2-3 years I do a Christmas film. Mm-hmm. And it's always like 110 outside and I have sleigh bells and flutes going, but it's a weird juxtaposition. But yeah, and it's also funny because on set, then everybody's, you know, wearing coats and scarves, and it's 110 out. But yeah,
good air conditioning.
The magic of Hollywood, right?
Magic of Hollywood, and I bet those air conditioning bills are high.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to take a short break here, and when we return, we've got a couple more questions for Chad, but we're also going to ask him the. Our favorite segment, what is the things that he can't wait to see through his children's eyes, or what has he seen through his children's eyes that he couldn't wait to share with his children that he might have experienced as a child? Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can get the Parents On Demand Network app on the iTunes Store or the Apple or the Google Play Store. You can also find many other parenting podcasts on that app. And you can stick around to the end of the episode and you'll hear about another great parenting podcast that if you like the Dad Experience, I'm sure you'll like. So stick around after the break and we're going to continue on with Chad. Welcome back again to the Dad Experience. We're here with Chad Raymond. Chad is a film score composer and a mighty good one and a mighty good dad from what we've heard about so far and the things that I know about Chad. So we're really glad that he's here with us and kind of getting back into the swing of things here, Chad. Now, you're in California in the LA area, yes?
Yes.
I don't know from what I remember, I don't think, but you don't have a whole lot of support system there as far as family.
Correct.
And how do you manage this? You have children and you have a family, and how do you manage that time of when you need a sitter or you need to do something or you got to take, you know, child A to some, you both, you have to take child A somewhere and the two children can't go. How did you kind of get through all that?
I think the thing that saves us is that, you know, my wife works a couple of days a week, and she does consulting and private practice with, she's actually a marital and family child therapist, which is awesome. That could be a whole nother segment. But she works a couple days a week seeing clients. And then, the rest of the time she's either home with the kids or, you know, working in the evenings, paperwork and stuff like that. And my schedule is flexible in that, yeah, I have a lot of deadlines, but if a kid needs to go to a doctor's appointment, it's easy enough for me just to kind of jet out for an hour or two and then just tack that on after the kids go to bed. Mm-hmm. Or over the weekend in between, you know, during naps for if I'm watching the little one while the other two are at soccer or something like that. So for us, I think what saved us is that we both don't have kind of your normal 8-to-5, 8-to-6 jobs. So it's really allowed us to work with our schedules and kind of tag team, really. The times when it gets difficult is, when if she has a big meeting and I have a client or something like that, and we run into those situations, and all of our friends have kids and all of our friends have jobs. So you run into that where it's like, you know, you don't have the grandparents. Luckily, we do have a couple people that we know and trust as, sitters. And we have a couple families who don't have kids anymore, or their kids are out of school, who have been a tremendous support to us as well. But I think flexibility, I think if we both kind of had that 8-to-5, 8-to-6 job, it would have been much, much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that does sound a little more manageable, at least for your sake. Do you get to see family quite a bit? Do you make it back to Michigan, or does family come to see you quite a bit? Or
Yep. Thankfully, 3 out of 4 grandparents are retired at this point. So I would say probably about every 2-3 months we have family out here, which is great. And we try to take full advantage of it. And we give it back to Michigan about 2-3 times a year.
That's great.
So the kids are well-versed in travel and taking off your shoes and security lines and kind of the whole spiel. I don't think we've ever really gone a couple months without seeing family. We try to travel a lot back there and get them out here, kind of doing the, it's not really bi-coastal thing, but
yeah, you could call the Great Lakes kind of the Midwest coast, can't
we? Right.
Hey, you know, I've seen people try. Yeah. But no, that's great. Has your work ever brought you back to Michigan?
No, it hasn't. Oh, I do have a couple of things coming up more for the concert hall that may involve some Michigan schools, but it's kind of so embryonic at this point that you know it's not even worth getting into really. But there are some opportunities as I'm trying to kind of in between my films get back into the concert world and working with you know colleges and professional
awesome
orchestras. So hopefully I'd love to get back there and work more in that area. Not that I don't love LA, but there's just something about the Midwest.
No, that's home. I mean, yeah, that's home for you too. Yeah. So it was, you know, obviously home is LA for you and your family, but you know, you grew up out here. So I can totally understand that and buy into that. Well, that's neat. So, you know, we like to finish off our show and close off our show with, you know, things that we can't wait to share through our children's eyes. Is there something that you experienced as a child or you and your wife did together as children, because you've known each other a long time, that you just really excited that your kids get to see or have seen and that you kind of get to re-experience that all over again?
You know, the big thing, I guess, lately is my daughter's really shown an interest in acting. Doing the last couple of years, she's done the school plays and, you know, minor parts. But I was never a performer. I didn't enjoy performing. I didn't enjoy getting up in front of people. I much prefer just writing music, sitting back and letting somebody else do it and kind of sitting in the back and hiding. That's my personality. But I do love the feeling of just working your butt off on something for a long time and just realizing the fruits of that success, and to see her really throw herself into a script and really sitting in her room with her little earbuds, practicing the songs on her MP3 player, and just knowing the amount of work that she's put into it. Again, even if only for 5 or 6 lines. And then when it goes well, just to see her beam. You know, I'm not saying that the last minute 3-pointer isn't awesome, or, you know, the last minute block in a soccer game isn't awesome, but there's just something about preparing for one moment for so long, and then having that one moment, even if it doesn't go extremely well, as long as it doesn't go bad, but just pulling that off, that's been amazing to watch her really just throw herself into that. So I think for me, and that's my career, really, my career is, you know, I spend a month or two on a project and you hope it goes well and you put everything into it. And kind of, I guess my career at this point has been like that. So to really see them just work hard and put their heart into something and have it go well, you know, that to me has been great. And other things, I mean, on the flip side of that, I really try to share with them all the times I haven't gotten projects. I really try to share with them, you know, there were a couple bigger projects that I really went for and I was on the last 2 or 3 people and I swore I was going to get it. And I didn't. And I make sure to share that with them so they know, you know, you can sometimes just work your butt off and put your heart and soul into something and it's not in the cards. So for me to watch them just strive and work hard for something and create something, that to me is great. But it's almost as important for them to see people do that and fail, mm-hmm. because it's part of life. And I want them to see that, you know what, daddy works hard, but daddy fails sometimes. Right. And it's just, it's it's reality.
I was going to say the same thing. It's so important that we understand that from failure, we gain knowledge and wisdom to be more successful in the future. And it's not always going to work out, you know, that soccer trophy that we get because we participated isn't always going to be there when you're 25 years old and you're second to last on a job interview, you know, and it's hard. And those are things that are hard to deal with, but to see that and share that with your children, I think is super important. And kudos to you and your family for doing those things.
Yeah, for me also, it's, you know, whenever I've worked with difficult people, and they could actually rattle off the people's names, I think, because I talk about them a lot. But, you know, I just want them to understand that, you know, life is not great. Now, you know, we have what I believe to be a comfortable life. So they are lucky in some respects that, you know, they have things that other people don't have. But that doesn't, you can't sit on that. You can't rely on that. And, you know, just constantly showing them that the world isn't how we're experiencing it. And, you know, some people, you know, by no fault of their own. I mean, there's that phrase, what is it? There by the grace of God go I. It's like, you know, I could have done everything right and worked my butt off, and this could not have worked out, and I could still be, you know, waiting tables, or worse, not have a job. And that's, you know, sometimes you just get dealt really bad hands in life. And for them just to understand that, to understand that, you know, there is some privilege in their life and they have a responsibility to look after those who don't. And for them to work hard for what they have and realize that sometimes it doesn't work out and sometimes it does. I would hate for them. I mean, the worst thing would be for them to grow up with no work ethic. And if I didn't share my bad stories, think that, you know, oh, daddy, everything he does is great. And I don't want that. I want them to see a flawed person that tries, I guess, is my goal for being a dad. If they just see somebody that, you know, I screw up a lot, but, you know, I'd get back up and I'd make the best of it. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, those are all some great things that you talked about today. And I think important things that we all need to think about and maybe incorporate into our lives with our children. And on a daily basis, I think there's some things that I learned that are super important and to keep our children humble and understanding the reason we do things for them. So thank you so much, Chad, for doing this today. Thanks for sharing with us and opening up and telling us about your life and moving there out to California and sharing how your amazing family has dealt with it and sharing your children with us. So thanks so much for being here.
Anytime, Adam, feel free to call.
I will. I might have you back on again and follow up when you win that Oscar for score or Grammy
for best exclusive interview. How's that?
All right. I will appreciate that. I'm going to hold you to that, Chad.
No problem.
Well, thanks so much for being here, but don't forget that the Dad Experience is part of the Parents on Demand Network. They're doing great things at the Parents on Demand Network. Stick around at the end of the episode to hear about another great podcast from that network. Also, if you have a show idea, want to be on the show or have some feedback for maybe Chad today or anybody else, shoot us an email, dadexppodcast@gmail.com or experienceanddad@gmail.com. Either one comes to me. You can also find us on Instagram, The Dad Experience, Facebook, The Dad Experience Podcast, I believe is, you can search for that and find us, and on Twitter at @DadExpPodcast. So hit us up on any of those medias, follow us, like us, subscribe, rate and review us on Apple Podcast or Google Podcast, wherever you may find us. So thanks so much again for joining us on The Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.
The Dad Experience.